This is Dust War Journals, your number one stop for all news and discussion related to Dust 1947. My name is Johannes, and with me today, as usual, are my lovely co-hosts.
Hello, everybody. This is the new parental guidance, Luda.
Yeah, we've had some feedback that I think one of our listeners called it your colorful metaphors were a bit too much.
Yeah, there's a Gorham problem with that guy, I tell you.
And Magnus is also here, as usual.
But as not very usual is our other guests today, and I want to welcome to the studio today our lovely guests. First off, we have Mr.
Olivier from the studio.
Welcome, welcome. And of course, the man, the myth, the legend himself.
It's not true, I'm not here. But
the ghost of Paolo Parente.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much for being here. It's been a long time since you've been on the show before, since last year, I think, for you, Paolo. And, Oliver, well, I think you were on, you kind of nestled your way into that discussion as well when Luda was back in Warsaw last year.
It was a wonderful time for me. It's one of my best times in Dust, the Dust community. All that time alone with Paolo and Olivier, and they were telling me all the crazy stuff.
Well, you squeezed every bit of information from them that you could.
Yeah, well, I tried, but I could squeeze those two for days if I was allowed.
So my first question for Paolo and Olivier has to be, how hard does Lada squeeze?
No, he's very polite when he squeezes you out.
No, thank you.
Your information.
Yeah, yes, of course. Thank you. It's hard, but it's out of love, so that's okay. We're basically here to talk a little bit about the Dust Nordic Tournament, which is one of the reasons that you were here. Yeah, I think people have seen a lot of stuff from it especially if they're on Facebook. There's been a lot of buzz about it, and I think we should talk at least a little bit about the presentation, Paolo, that you did, and some of the news that you announced that are coming.
But I'm really glad I showed a real to the community. The response is very positive.
Yeah,
I was scared and nervous, you can imagine. I mean, I think I've designed them like 7 times and decided so many different recipes for them. And this is the final one, the one I really want. The one that was the first of my choice is to go for the pulp filling that matches perfectly our Dust figurines. And well, the response is so positive that I'm really, really happy. It's good.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of just responses like, "Oh, finally! I've been waiting 10 years for this. I'm almost in tears and stuff like that." It's just So it's fantastic to see that it's moving. So let's talk a little bit about the tournament itself, also. There was quite a bit of turnout. We were at one point actually at full capacity, but some people had to bow out last minute, unfortunately. At the finals, it was won by our good friend and colleague, fellow Viking, Laser Roger, like he's called now, Ninja Roger.
Ninja Roger.
Tide of ninjas.
Yeah, the tide of ninjas, exactly. He brought an army with 10 ninja squads in it. So. Yeah.
But with flowers on the bases.
Yes,
of course. So lovely.
Very lovely. And his own custom 3D printed tokens. And he gone all out for that army. So really, really cool. It was an awesome weekend, I have to say.
Yeah, it's definitely the tournament on the planet with the most beautiful tables. It was like that. It's like that every year. So that's really, really impressive every time. The tournament was very interesting. I don't think I saw two identical armies. Yeah. Every block was played. Every faction was played. I mean, it's you could see the whole range of miniatures that we have on the table. So that was very cool. I really like what you did. All the tables, I hope people can find the pictures on the internet. All the tables have a lot of character. These all unique tables, and the scenario adapts to the table every time, and it's a brilliant way of doing things. When you have these beautiful scenery, buildings, and tables, it's a perfect way to do it. And that was a lovely time. Lovely time.
Another thing that was very cool is about the scenery. When the scenery didn't really match the existing scenery for DAS, then there was a sheet of paper explaining the special rules for each scenery element.
Yeah.
That was very well organized, very professional, if I may say, and make it easy for the gamers to understand what we're dealing with without and avoiding discussion, without discussions. It's a wonderful job.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah.
And as usual, I would add something to that because it's interesting. The miniature gaming, by definition, is an infinite number of tables.
Yeah.
So it's impossible to plan rules for every configuration that sure. every gaming group on the planet is going to encounter. So I advise you, as I do every time I can, to create your own rules, to create your own scenarios, your own terrain rules, using the guidelines that we can offer. But I mean, on these tables, you had Derricks and V1 rocket pads. I mean, yeah, these need specific rules from the community that plays on this table. And this is not something that I can imagine doing for...
Yeah, we kind of beforehand, we just printed those and taped them right on the table because most players will not be playing on that exact board, for example, with the V1 rocket. So only the players who actually plays on that table needs to know the exact rules. That was the idea. So we just taped them straight there.
Yeah, perfect job.
Mm-hmm. Very elegant solution.
Mm. And I definitely agree with you, Olivier, that one of the main reasons why you want to play a miniatures game is to express your creativity in different ways. And this is definitely one of the things that we've taken to heart to really make sure that every game is unique. Every game is something new.
Yeah, it is. There's something else other than perfect tournament balance.
Another thing I would like to add is that no matter how intricate the scenery was, every table played on a grid.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This myth that some players sometimes discuss with me about playing gridless because otherwise they cannot use their scenery, well, just proved wrong during this weekend, very wrong.
And that's one of the things that we kind of wish we could do is bring our tables to players all over the world in a more practical way, other than just showing pictures and maybe short videos, just to bring them to the people over in Singapore or in the US and just to show what you can actually do on the grid.
Yeah, but even these only are very inspiring. I mean, it's just to show them, say... Yeah,
I think the community was inspired.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hope
you
so.
Gave a very good signal to the community.
And just talking about the rest of the world, Paolo, you've been kind of a whirlwind tour around the last few weeks, I think.
Yeah, I've been so lucky to have to attend some events in the States and then came over Europe and more events. Das Nordic was my last one, but yeah, I've been attending Gamma in Nevada, then a few Das days here and there, one in Atlanta, one in Toledo, and then Adepticon, which is my favorite convention ever. And yeah, it's been tough on my body, I must say, but I'm really exhausted, but I'm also happy because, again, keeping touch with the community in person is important to me. As well as maybe the community, because it gives me the pulse of what is the feeling around our game. And, you know, the community is growing nicely and steadily, and it's always a blessing to be able to meet the guys.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Play with them sometimes.
And gals.
These guys, yeah.
Yeah. You see that when you look at the different pictures from all over the world from different events. That's there. Of course, there's a lot of guys playing, but they're starting to get a lot of women. They're starting to get a lot of kids playing, which is really cool. We saw that just this weekend, Luda, with your daughter, actually.
Yeah, well, I had my daughter with me, and as everyone who has been to the convention has heard, 2,000 times. I'd like to just point out that it was not my dice that were weighted, it was her. Because every time I rolled to try to hit, I drew blanks and shields. But when, as soon as she picked up the same dice and started rolling, she was like producing 9 out of 10 hits and stuff like that. It was ludicrous. Fortunately for my opponents, she phased in and out still. She hasn't turned 8 yet, so she lost interest a little bit, and then she came back into it, and she was like, I had to sugarcoat her a little bit to play all the games, but she were there all the games. She had a huge fun. She loves the mercs, as I've said a couple of times, the ladies, and she just wants to play them every time, and loves when they beat the boys. And
just give her a couple of years, and she will be like a master commander of Dust.
Yeah, I hope so. I would be so proud of parent if I would to see her win the European Championship in 2 years or something like that. That's the goal we have.
We have a lot of ladies who play the mercenaries these days. Yeah. It's nice.
That's very good.
Yeah.
And just off topic, hanging on to something that Paolo said, I actually want to give a little bit of credit also to Magnus for another thing. Yeah. Since when we started with our Gothenburg events with the Dust, we named them, or you named them, the Dust Days. Mm-hmm. And I don't know anyone calling them the Dust Days before that. And now people all over the world are calling their tournament Dust Days. So I might be rubbing your ego the wrong way, or it might not be true.
I don't know. I'm not sure if ours was really the first going by that name.
I can't remember.
I think the first one is 2012 or something. I don't want to remember
a Dust Day being named by a guy from Argentina who used to play Dust in the very early days.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, forgot the name. Ignacio.
Okay.
And that's the first time I heard Dust Day, and then he got into us.
Okay. Yeah, but what we can say is that on our first event we had here, we had 6 people playing.
Yeah, that's another thing.
Then
that's
we had a more big
event. Now there's a few more guys. Yeah. So I've seen this question come up sometimes, like, how do you do it? You just keep going, doing what you do, and it will grow.
Yeah,
sure, yeah.
That's just the way. Have perseverance. That's how you do it, absolutely.
Or in our case, in your face attitude. I mean, just keep at them.
Yeah, we all contribute with different factors.
Yeah.
Yeah, before this show, we kind of asked around the community also, because we know that we would have you guys here. So we asked around to get some questions for Paolo and Olivier. So let's just dive in, I think. We have a lot of questions from all over the world.
Oh, I have no answers, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we'll see. One question that's actually come from a lot of people, they want to know more about the history of the game itself. You told a bit about this last time we had you on the show, but stuff like, where does the actual name Dust come from, and how did you develop the story and the setting for the game?
You have 2 minutes.
Starting now.
Dust started as a personal project, combining my love for model kits since my childhood. I used to build World War II 1/35 scale model kits. World War II was very present in my life for many reasons. My father fought in it. All his generation was really involved in the war. So I grew up in a family where everybody had fought. All his friends were involved directly on the field. They kept talking about things, and they had great stories. My father was decorated Medal of Honor, so he was a medic, and he was a decorated Medal of Honor. All the people he saved and stuff. That was my childhood. Plus, of course, I really enjoyed building model kits. When I grew up, I learned how to draw, and I started developing this project. The great idea I had was mixing science fiction with World War II. And I was lucky enough to meet our boss, my business partner, William Yao, who decided to invest on the project. And when finally we were able to make it a figurine game, then Olivier came in, and we made it happen. We've been lucky and unlucky, of course. So the universe, I started it, and then Olivier has been developing since he came on board, so 10 years ago. All the cool stuff that is had been adding made the universe richer and more interesting. And, of course, we have a good use of his talent, I would say. And, yeah, we love it.
Very cool. Another question that's also come from several people that's kind of related to this. How do you see the future of the game developing? Like, both the release and models and stuff like that, but also like the story, how will it progress? Yeah, any long going plans?
From the very beginning, I think we talked about that we wanted this game and this universe to be alive,
yeah,
and moving forward. So the our oldest players have seen the timeline evolve already, and you're going to see the timeline evolve more and more and more and more, which doesn't, I mean, we can still have battle in our own past. In the next expansion, Paradise Lost, you'll see there's a small campaign. There's a lot of campaigns, but there's a small campaign that happens a few months before the timeline. Yeah. It's a battle in Rome. And as you may have seen on the new map of the world, the Axis has conquered the Italian territory, except from Sicily. But these battles happen during the battle for Rome. So we can always go back to the past to tell stories, but the main universe will continue to move forward. And we have a lot of plans for our universe. It's not going to be static. It's not going to be static for long.
Just jumping in there, I have to ask, though, did they capture Italy or liberate Italy?
The way I see it is liberated.
Yeah, I thought you would.
The way I see it is captured. Yeah. But both are correct. Both are correct, of course. But, you know, now there's a gigantic, gigantic mythos monster in the center of Rome. So nobody's happy.
Yeah.
They have other problems to deal with. The poor Romans. No, but just, I don't know. We're going to move to the 60s someday, but should we say that? I don't know.
Well, we don't know yet in which way we will move the timeline so far. There are plans. There is a timeline written, and we have milestones that we are reaching, and then we're going to move on from them. But yeah, I think it's too soon to unveil the whole thing.
Well, we're in the 40s now. We'll be in the 60s in 20 years.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Of course.
So, everything but definitely, you know, the world of Dust is not...
It's not static.
It's not static. It's evolving. And things are happening. You saw. I mean, the event of the mythos rising on the planet is huge, and we have a lot of more stuff coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But do you see that we, in a few years' time, perhaps we'll be playing like that other game, you know, in two timelines at the same time? Perhaps some people are playing like 47 and some are playing, say, 68, or...
No, because it's, you can go back in time for one scenario.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But everything, as usual, from the start, we've made everything compatible with everything else.
Ah, good, good.
So you can play a storyline scenario, let's say, a major battle, or you can play, mix and match everything you want, as usual. Mm-hmm. We've always done that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's awesome. So let's go to some more specific questions. We have, for instance, there's been a lot of talk about the Vril, of course. And one of the questions we got from Will Patterson, are the Vrils going to have flying saucers of any kind, like aircraft or something like that?
The Vril army, it's actually a vanguard of the major Vril army, comes to Earth with anti-grav vehicles. They are looking like they're flying. They're mostly anti-grav. Some, seen from far, will look like a flying saucer. Mm-hmm. You know, when they come towards you, that silhouette will remind you of a flying saucer. And then when you have the model in your hands, you will see It's more than that. I personally love flying saucers. It's not a problem with them. It's just I don't want to limit the shapes and designs to a circle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good.
But the silhouette seen from far, and when you will see the first pictures of those, you will kind of see flying saucers for sure.
Nice.
And that's kind of emblematic, I think, about the design of the Dust models in a way, because it's something that at first glance looks familiar. But once you go and look closer, it's something you haven't seen before.
Hmm.
I feel like that with a lot of the models, actually.
Hopefully, yeah.
So, Joshua Arrington asks, one of the fun things about Dust 1947 is that each faction has a particular weapon flavor. For example, the Germans have the lasers and the Japanese have the railguns and so on. And what about the Vrils? What kind of army flavor or special weapons could we see for them?
You'll see.
Of course. So that's
no, I can expand a bit. The human technology that we have in the world now is, you have to consider this old real tech.
Yeah.
So basically, we can tell a bit about this story.
Yeah, that's why they come with flyers and anti-grav, because the walkers for the Vril today are old technology.
Hmm.
But basically, the starship that crashed and that was found by the Germans is a small repair craft sent to repair like a radio, real radio station. It's not a real battleship full of the new cool stuff.
Mm.
And it's old tech for them.
And it crashed a long time ago.
Exactly.
Before it was found.
Yeah. Mm.
So since then, the real have evolved considerably. They don't have walkers. They don't have these. All this is gone for them for a long, long time. So that's why you'll see that. I don't want to give up too much, but of course they have powerful energy weapons.
I call them antimatter weapons, and I think that should be enough.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of other cool technology.
Yeah, we just have to wait and see exactly what they do, so of course.
Yeah, and if you don't want to expand on it right now, I'd just like to add, though, that the way you describe the weapon on Nordic, I feel that was a very super fun way, so I sincerely hope you can manage that way.
I hope that Olivier and his group of playtesters will come up with a very good solution about that. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, it would be super.
So Aaron Black asks, now that the Real might be making their long-awaited appearance soon, are there any plans for a global campaign in which, like, tournament games played physically worldwide could be used to redefine the current territories that each faction controls and how that could change the world map of the game?
This is already going on with our online campaign?
Yeah, in a way.
The results of the last year campaign, I mean, gave shape to the last edition of the map. And yeah, of course. This is why we have the online campaign. Please contribute to that.
Yeah, absolutely. So that actually brings us neatly into the next question from Gauthier Forno. How much does the battle reports we submit actually change the story?
How much? That's difficult.
Well, there were territories that were really influenced by it, and I've heard recently that we should add some territories, especially in Northern Europe, like Alexa suggested. But now, how much? It's too old information, I don't remember. But yeah, there was a serious influence of the results.
Yeah,
nice.
Yes, but they modify the map, but you also cannot completely modify it every time.
It's, no, of course.
I mean, if you look at France, how they moved during World War II, there were not major swings weeks to weeks or months to months. But every bat rep is taken into account for sure. But things move slowly in the world of Dust on the front.
Of course, I just think that people kind of get the idea because it feels like stuff is happening quickly, more quickly than they're used to, at least. For the latest few releases, there's been like going from January, we've been on January 47 quite a long time.
Sure.
Then we moved to the summer and now we're in September.
But you have to remember, in January 1947, this is the Axis throws at the planet everything they have. Yeah. Everything they have. That's the start of Dust. Yeah. So that's why but it takes some time to move. But now they are losing traction. It's been 6 months and the others haven't stayed passive. But the Axis tried and failed, we can say failed, to take over the world in one fell swoop. But there's still a major, major, major power to be reckoned with.
Absolutely.
For sure.
That actually brings us neatly into a question from Oliver Galka. Why did you decide to break the IJN from the Axis? I like that they are a different block. It's always nice to have something new. But being able to use the Japanese in a German army would be cool, wouldn't it?
Can I answer? I think the storyline is much better this way. It has an interesting story about the pride of a people who are really proud.
Yeah.
And matches perfectly their culture, or perfectly, the best way we could. And I wouldn't go back on that decision. I think the Japanese deserves to be their own bloc.
And we still have the Japanese army, which is a part of the Axis still.
Absolutely.
So we might see some units from them in the future.
For now.
Yeah, for now.
Teaser.
There's a lot of things open. But the Emperor of Japan was never going to stay. Obey orders from an German admiral? That doesn't make sense. This thing was not meant to last. No.
Yeah, because he's one of the
he's a
bigger
god.
Leader that is still alive, so to speak.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, not to say too much there.
No, yes. But that cat is out of the bag now, isn't it? I think so.
Huh?
It's been a while, so...
Yeah. You have to... You cut it out if it was too much, you know.
No, that's fine.
Good.
All right, so let's go to something completely different. Brian Junske, kind of a contributor who regularly shows up and gives us very interesting questions.
I'm an official fan of Brian.
Yeah.
Good. We all are.
And he asked, Paolo, years ago you mentioned a new allied two-legged walker that you called the Bear.
Yeah, I remember that.
Can you give us any details on what that was supposed to be?
A heavy version of a two-legged walker, heavier than the Mickey and the Mickey chassis, capable of using heavier and bigger turrets and heavier and bigger armament, occupying a square, using a bigger base that we already tooled, that is 93 millimeters in diameter, like exactly matching our squares. So it's an ongoing project. I really want to do it, and I have a lot of sketches of it, but no designs, no 3D. That's, otherwise, I would have proudly shown it during my presentation. Next year, for sure, we will have designs.
Then we will finally have bears in the game.
Yeah,
that would be the only one.
We will have to bear with you on that one, I guess, or something like. But sorry.
Yeah. Just talking about that, there are a few other older designs that haven't shown up as playable units. Like one, for instance, that I've always talked about is the Gunther. The small kind of mobile suit-like thing for the Axis.
No, the Gunther is not small at all.
It's smaller than the other Axis walkers, if you compare like a human to it.
The Gunther is as big as a Königslutter, just vertical.
Oh, right, yeah.
Is a big boy. I don't like that design anymore.
Okay.
And I like the Königslutter better and the Jagdluther better, and I think we have better designs now. I don't want to go back. Some other old designs were just tanks on legs. I regret that. I don't really like the Mickey for that, even if it's a very popular model and people love it. I still think that is the weakest design I have in the line.
Just made someone sad.
From a design point of view, you like it, I'm happy. You know?
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons why I got into Dust. I bought the coffin box just for the Mickey. So, sorry.
That's all good. But yeah, tanks on legs with diesel punk, I mean, we can do better than that. We will do better than that. And we'll keep doing better. That's the goal.
Very cool. Okay, on the topic of new units, Johnny Grogan asked whether there'll ever be civilian models in the game, like the old Operation Frostbite style from 1843. So like neutral models or something like that?
I have a wish. Olivier says no, and I understand why he's saying no. I have a wish of developing one day groups of resistance.
But that's not that's not civilians.
Oh, but they're civilians. They take up, they take weapons, and they go fight. But
but it's not. These are different things. You said civilians, and then neutral, and then resistance. It's three different things.
Okay. The only thing that I plan to do that looks a bit like a civilian is resistance.
Yeah,
that I agree with.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But that could be cool.
No, no. There's no civilians.
No civilians
have fled the battlefield of dust.
Hopefully.
What would be the purpose of civilians in the game? I don't understand the question really.
What would be the purpose of a cow?
On
the battlefield.
Food and milk.
Well, now we have aliens and mythos creatures. Some civilians, food.
Yes. Okay. Fair enough.
Okay. Okay. Yes. I give you that point.
That would actually be disturbing, but like a terrain with some fences and some humans inside. It's
not torture civilians, please. We play with toy soldiers. It's okay, but no,
resistance looking like Bullseye, for example.
This
is perfectly fine.
Absolutely. That's a very good comparison, because
that's a soldier in civilian clothes. Not a civilian.
But you can see the kind of design, the visual design there.
Sure. But the civilians...
Some of the Mythos figurines from the command squad, for example.
Yeah.
The medic, they're in civilian clothes. Totally civilian clothes. Some of the cultists as well, they're in civilian clothes. But they're not civilians.
That's true.
So I don't know if he's meaning looking civilian or real being civilian. Looking civilian, yes.
Yeah.
Can I just cut in with a question, just because I just need to cut in. I haven't heard myself talk or something. No, I'm sorry.
You've been behaving so far.
Yeah, I'm going to try.
I'm proud of you.
Now it's over. Just going back to the Mickey, though. One thing that was super fun, totally illogical, but still happened in the early days, was that you could jump the Mickeys. And I know they won't jump again, but could we have... some kind of mech, because I'm a Battle Mech fan from since I was like 1 year old or something like that. No, but almost. I want jumpable mechs. Is it possible in 68 at least or something?
No, you're not rich enough to bribe me for this.
No. But perhaps you need a kidney or something. Yeah, come on.
You could at least do kind of a platoon rule, like for the KV-47's airdrop. If you drop them onto another walker, they could take damage or something.
Death from above.
I forgot why the Mickey doesn't jump anymore.
Yeah. Because I remove it.
Is there a real reason or?
Yeah, I hated it.
Because it was fun.
No, it's
a good picture. The poor guys inside.
It's a 40 tons vehicle.
Of course you can do it, but you want to do it.
Inside.
Yes,
you cannot jump.
No, I know.
If it falls from a cliff, everybody's inside is dead.
And just reminds me about weird rules and stuff like that about jumping. There's an old Swedish role playing game where the kind of typical fantasy stuff, where you can get what they call hero points, and these allow you to do specific like heroic actions.
Sure.
One of those actions is that you can you can't be hurt if you fall off horseback. The rules doesn't claim how far you have to fall. You can fall from a horse down like a 200-meter cliff, but you are a hero, so you don't take any damage.
Yeah,
that's super cool.
That's the same bending of the rules that the guy who told me that. He can fire his mortar from a helicopter.
Yeah.
I'm not interested.
Well, let's not open this chapter, because me, I'm against most of the things I see on the battlefield today. Yeah?
And to answer the KV-47, the weakest part of any armored vehicle is the bottom.
Yeah.
So if a KV-47 falls on something that is as hard as itself, like another walker, for example, both are going to be destroyed. Now, it might be a valid tactic, but still it's going to be forbidden in the game.
Well, I'll start collecting money. And everyone out there, Patreons alike, you heard it first here at Dust War Journals. Keep sending us money to get Olivier to change the rules for the Mickeys.
My,
okay?
My price is very affordable.
So, kind of tangentially related to the airdrop question, Bill Hegg asked, with how devastating airdrop actions can be for the opponent, are there any thought to re-examining the chance of success? At the moment, it's 2 out of 3 to actually get the action.
Bill Hegg wiped me out in 2 turns during Adepticon with the Fallschirmjägers.
Yeah.
That's why.
Okay.
Sorry for me.
It's an interesting question. Maybe 66% is too much. Maybe I rerolled, which gives us 55%.
Yeah.
Could be tried. 33% definitely not, because then airborne units basically completely disappear from the game in one fell swoop. We can try 55. You can also play with special tournament rules and have a very foggy day where planes don't see their target clearly.
Yeah, and their mission is not the battle.
Sorry?
In the foggy day, they abort mission and they go back to the air.
There's no paratroopers when there's no clear day. So that might be, I don't know.
Yeah, I know there are instances where people have done stuff like that, that it's been heavy winds or stuff like that. So yeah, maybe one way you can experiment with it.
Let's see if we have a problem at 66%. Let's try that 55 someday, but so far I'm pretty okay, but we'll see. Yeah. We'll see.
All right. Our next question comes from Mateusz Kuszynski, and he asks, where do you take your inspiration from? We know that Paolo is a fan of John Carter, and we can see that with some of the Vrills. Are there any other sources like this that truly inspire you to create stuff for Dust?
He kind of answered already. I mean, World War II and sci-fi.
Yeah, in general, that's true. Yeah.
Something specific. I mean, there's specific comic books. Sure,
The work of Ko Yokoyama, a Japanese designer who has his own line of model kits called the Machine and Krieger, M-A-K.
Yes.
I've been collecting his models for like, I think, 35 years. They were called SF3D at the time. They were published on Hobby Japan, the magazine. Then he changed the name when he opened his own magazine, Model Graphics. He's a monster and he's a genius. He was able to create these World War II looking shapes and mixing them with science fiction and still keeping World War II designs and weaponry. He was, for sure, one of the main things that made me think about doing Dust the way it is. Even if my models don't really look like his, besides maybe the Steel Guards, which are an homage to his work at least partially. Hellboy, the comic book with the presence of the Germans at the beginning of the story, and some of the cool characters are there. It's been a big source of inspiration, of course.
Yeah, I kind of guess that there's some things that touch overlap there.
Yeah. There was an old costume for Sigrid that really was too inspired by one of the Hellboy female characters. To a point that he asked me to change the costume, which I did, of course.
Can we, Johannes, put a link to the Japanese artist homepage in?
Absolutely.
On the homepage, so people who want to learn more can just check out perhaps some of that.
There's a very active group on Facebook about his work, and they publish models which are really well done. One guy is from Hong Kong, and he uses very, very innovative camouflage schemes. One of his works, and I acknowledged him on the group, is inspired the new camouflage for our mercenaries with the pink and light blue.
Ooh.
It actually comes from the work of this guy in Hong Kong, who was a master modeler. Yeah. There is a lot of cool stuff to see on that Facebook page.
Yeah.
Okay.
Called Koyokoyama.
Yeah, thank you. Cool. So speaking about inspiration, something that I personally have been wondering a little bit. Besides your work on dust, you, Paolo, known, I think, for most other people as an illustrator. For like card games and other stuff.
Sure.
So, do you have any specific kind of art inspiration sources? I personally think I see some inspiration there from certain comic book artists and
a lot of them. I went through different phases in my work. So. There was a moment, a lucky moment actually, that Simon Beasley was the main inspiration for a bunch.
I was actually going to ask specifically about Simon Beasley because I see some similarities sometimes.
It's not a secret. He was an inspiration for like a whole generation of artists of my age. And there was a high request of the type of style in comic books which gave me the opportunity to do the comic book for Mutant Chronicles, in which he could only do the covers, and the interiors were done by me and other colleagues from Italy, kind of following that path with our means, of course. And at the same time, Magic was looking for the same style, so they had Bliss from the UK, they had Greg Staples from the UK, they had Glenn Fabry, Alex Orley. There is a whole, I would say, a whole generation of artists that was really influenced by them. I moved away from that style when I work on Dust. You will see it's completely different. It's more like my personal view of things, and I no longer work in that other style anymore now, I think. Because that, my opinion, and you know the way I see things in my work.
You might do some relapses some from time to time, maybe.
I think it's correct that I'm away from that style. But it was a wonderful moment of my career. I mean, I had access to many big publishers in the US and in Europe. I had the opportunity to do Just Dread, Slain, Conan, I mean, some Batman stuff, Mutant Chronicles, which was very lucky for me because that gave me access to Magic the Gathering. And
and you got your name out there, basically.
But I mean, there are so many great artists out there.
Yes.
And I would say they are all a very big source of inspiration. I recognize geniuses out there, and I look at their works and I cry because I cannot do the same. But yeah, it's a big world with full of inspiration.
Yes, of course. Talking a little bit about design, so this question is for the both of you. Seth Squires asks, of all the Dust models, which are your favorite designs?
Oh, that's a good question.
None.
They're all crap.
No, they're not.
No.
But yeah. You want me to answer first? You think about it?
Yeah,
I know which
think
one.
About it. But...
To me, the most accomplished design I have in the line is the Jack Luther.
Oh, yeah.
The Luther is very well balanced. The very geometric shape matches well with the design of the guns and the legs and the way it stands. I think that it is still my best work design-wise.
Yeah.
And so my favorite model. I kind of crazily love also the Japanese New Walkers, though.
Yeah, they're crazy amazing.
But for which I only designed the weapons. Because the body itself was designed by another artist, Davide Fabri from Italy, which has contributed a lot to Dust in the beginning. What about you, Oliveira?
I think it's the... I agree with the Jack Luther for sure, but no, my favorite... It's the six-legged Allied Walker. with the long term.
Yeah.
Yeah, because weirdly enough, it makes a lot of sense in a pure military way, for me at least. Because you have a crew that is fighting, you're gonna have guys reloading. This miniature is alive.
Yeah,
it's living, and you have a guy in the front, and you have guys manning the machine guns, looking for planes, and so this is alive, and you can customize it as much as you want. You can give it as much or as little life as you want. You can stack artillery shells behind it because they've been firing all day. And I really, really, really like these. That's my favorite. But this whole line of models, I really, really, really love them.
But how about a version 2 of the Long Tom with a double blast?
Yes, maybe. Absolutely.
Walking priest. We saw something.
This is going to be the time to revisit some stuff.
Nice.
I agree that the long term needs a little bit of help.
Absolutely. So Joshua Hatch asks, kind of related to that, are there any specific plans to go back and revisit and maybe re-sculpt some of the older models in the range, like similar to how Rosie got her a new model recently?
Honestly, with time, all of them. I have plans to redesign and remold the heavy infantry for the Allies and make it in our plastic, because it's feasible, and it will be very, very, very nice, much nicer than now. But of course, with time and the resources, we are clearly looking into re-sculpt all the references, because our figurines today look much, much better.
Yeah, there is a big difference between if you just look at the Rosie models, the old one and the new one besides each other. That's a big difference.
That's normal.
Yes, of course it is.
Absolutely normal.
Yeah.
The technology is better today.
The 3D sculpting has changed a lot of stuff.
Well, the 3D sculpting allows you to give the correct size to a figurine because you decide it, instead of just getting a putty figurine that is the size it is. And, you know, and we also found better sculptors, and yeah, and the molding techniques have evolved. So, yeah. I don't regret any of our figurines. I mean, no. I love them, but I can say that some of the old Allies, especially, are kind of weaker than the rest of the line. So they would be the first I would like to re-sculpt, both heavy troops and class 2 troops.
Yeah, I think that's something that people will really like, because people have been wanting to get a refresh of that for a long time, I think.
So us too.
Yeah. And the Allied 2 in non-winter attire would be really, really nice. So yeah, like and, more summer
and version. Always remember that we have seen these miniatures for longer than you.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, of course.
So nobody wants to change us more than us.
It's true.
It's true.
But on the topic of Rosie as well, I just have to ask you now that I have the chance, Paolo. You talked somewhat about perhaps she's getting a squad with bazookas or something like that
She's getting a squad of mechanics who go fight and repair things with her.
Ooh, when can we do? Is there a timeline to that, or is it
this year for sure in resin, as exclusive to our website? And as soon as possible in plastic.
Great news.
Actually, it feels silly because I have pictures of that and I forgot to put it in the presentation.
But you don't have to show others, just show us, you know.
And I think I made the card.
Everything is ready.
Cool.
Actually, those are being manufactured now. So by the summer, they should be out.
Nice. Yeah.
So talking a bit about older models and new cards and stuff like that, Ben Langen, our old friend from the US.
Hello, Ben.
Hello. He's asking, are there any plans to release new updated faction decks and rebalancing the points values of the units?
No.
Short and simple.
No. I don't think... Basically, I don't want to rebalance things that haven't been resculpted, and yeah, of course, but
which is not going to happen tomorrow.
Ben, send me a list of things you think needs to be rebalanced, because I don't think there are that many. There's a couple, maybe at most.
But that's the thing with balance. Everyone has different opinions, depending on how their local meta looks. Mm.
So and now it needs a lot of convincing to convince me to change something.
Mm.
We changed the platoon very recently, thanks to one of the Vikings. He said, "You have a laser. You have a Blue Croix Grenadier platoon that has no laser command squad."
Yeah,
and I said, "You're absolutely right." So we changed it, and these are changes that are absolutely fine, and we need to implement them as soon as possible. But they are. I mean, I just played Mythos this weekend, and I had my ass kicked by Rangers. So what exactly needs rebalancing?
That's so true.
So the guy had hot dogs and pounders, and it just destroyed me. He had bazookas and so yeah. I'm open to any suggestion, but be very convincing.
May I suggest just a small wording on the Ranger Heavy Ranger platoon, though, that their super saves should be active until they move in turn two, instead just dropping in the beginning of turn two.
Yeah, like with the PT-47, the camouflage.
Because they are the only one now that drops their cover on the start of the turn. Yeah. Perhaps this is too specific, but I'm sorry.
No. This is an interesting question, because maybe in a future version of the rules, we will have a phase at the end of a turn, or the phase at the beginning of a turn, where we remove all counters and stuff like that. Or because this is a bit complicated at the moment in the game, and I don't really like it. Effects that carry on from one turn to another are always complex in any game, and those that and at the beginning of the turn, or at the beginning of the activation, or I don't like all that. So this will be normalized, I think, for every unit. I will try to do something like that in the future, for sure. Because at the moment, everybody's kind of lost, and it's complicated, so I don't like that.
Good. Very well. Emil Persson, one of our fellow Vikings, asks that Mark from War Factory is going to arrange a tournament in which all the players will get a free Paolo model, or rather, it's Tito.
It's Tito. So,
yes, but his question is, will this model be possible to get only on that event, or will there be other opportunities?
There are models who are previewed for events, because we think that people who travel a long way and attend an event which is official deserves a little reward, but it's a preview. That's it. It's given, so it will be a free model for a few events during the year until Das Nordic next year. Maybe it will be too late because everybody will have it already. We'll see. Maybe we'll arrange something different for next year in Das Nordic. This year they are stickers, so okay. But yeah, it will be released normally in the line of what we call Dust Collection, so the resin line exclusive to our website. And it will be released actually quite soon together with a group of Lady Mechanics that you've seen during the presentation. Now it's all over the internet.
Yeah.
And of course, there's a plan of doing the same thing in plastic as soon as possible.
Very cool.
But it's not me. It just looks a bit like the belly is too small. He's too.
He doesn't do you justice. They could have beefed him up a little bit and put some muscles and stuff like that.
Because he has more muscle than me. By
no,
far.
No. I think it's.
I'm an old hunchback. He's straight with his back. Yeah.
Because I think you said that before, that the kind of goal is that all these preview models are just that, they're previews on stuff that will be. I think there was kind of one thing that we have to wait a bit longer for, the Kaori, the sniper lady.
Oh, Kaori.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because something happened with the mold, there was something...
Yeah, we need to work on it again. So Kaori will not be in plastic for... You mean in plastic, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. We need to wait a bit more.
Yeah. All right.
The weapon of Kaori needs to be made in hard plastic. And now we don't have a hard plastic mold available, which has been tooled now. So as soon as I have one, then I will put the weapon in there and then it will happen.
Awesome. Yeah. Jeff McKeon has a question each for you guys. So for Paolo, he asks, what color is VK so I can paint it correctly on my terrain?
You need to download the novel about Svergaard written by Andy Chambers. There is a chapter at the end of the novel called The VK and You, and it explains everything. There is, anyway... Before refinement, VK is in two components. One is kind of dark and one is kind of light. Then you can see it bluish and reddish or whatever, but it's very well explained by Andy Chambers in the chapter. The whole novel is worth of reading.
Oh, yes, definitely. And on that topic, isn't that supposed to be more, or is Andy now occupied with other stuff?
I'm begging Andy to write more. And he says yes, but then he doesn't start. I promise, I tell him, I pay you in advance, just do it. But he's busy, he's very busy.
Okay. A lot of us who read it once, a second one, and we hope and we pray. And
he wants to do it.
Oh,
he wants to
do it.
He's just being very busy.
No, of course, of course. I can understand.
Yeah. And Jeff's question for Oliver, are there any plans to release... any other games in the Dust universe, like, for instance, epic scale games or board games, RPGs, card games, stuff like that?
Yes.
Short and sweet, as always.
Yes, and about other scales, no really.
No.
Even if I...
We discussed this also. I mean...
I love epic scales. It's my favorite scale for wargaming. Mm. But it makes awful miniatures.
There is something I can add there. Going back to our evolving timeline, Olivia and I have been discussing about how would we play Dust 1963 when it goes, when humanity goes to space and start, traveling in our solar system. And we came up with the idea of making it in a smaller scale, but this is so far in the future. I mean, don't expect us releasing a smaller scale game next year or in the next few years, because it's for the future. But the idea would be, instead of forcing everybody to buy big armies for the new era, maybe it would be cool to have a smaller scale. So keep 47 as 47 with all the affinities, and then a different game for a different year. I think that's a good
idea. That might be a very good kind of compromise to separate the two games more. I like that idea.
That's all your idea.
So we'll see what happens then.
I love games in smaller scales. I love them, and now I think we can make cool small miniatures.
Oh, we're capable of that.
Which for the longest time was not true at all.
No. The structure need to be different than our walkers. They will be too fragile in a smaller scale. And there are too many empty spaces in our units, especially the vehicles.
Now you have to you can't just shrink down the designs. You have to make completely new designs from scratch. Yeah.
No, that these doesn't.
So for 63 will be perfect.
Yeah. So talking a bit about upcoming releases, James Swartout is asking, any word on the release for X33? The concept art is super interesting, and I'm curious as of the overall size of this monstrosity.
Yeah, how big is it?
Around 15 millimeters, and we need to be patient. The sculpting is not started yet. So
it's just it's concept art at the moment. Yeah.
I love it, and I want to.
Yes.
I want it to happen.
But on that topic, though, you talked a little bit about Blue Bloodcross being it's their year now.
Yeah.
But could you expand both of you, please, a little bit if what we can expect perhaps more from Bloodcross during this year? Can we see more models or more platoons? More what can we? Is there more for the Blue Bloodcross players to expect this year?
The first thing I want to do is to release the set with Sigrid and the Ape Heroes, which are now only available in resin.
Yeah, please.
They deserve to be plastic and available to everyone.
Mm.
We are talking with Oliver about heavy armor apes, a bit in the way like Gregor looks.
But not traitor.
No, enough traitors, please. And but yeah, it's in development, so exact release dates I cannot give.
Oh, okay.
All right. And talking about size of miniatures, Robert Lowry asks, given that we're now getting two huge Titanic figures, namely the Avatar of Cthulhu and the Japanese robot, the Steel Samurai, are there any plans to release such huge figures for every block?
But do you have it already? the SSUs have huge, super heavy tanks. The
Koenigs Wotan is gigantic.
Yeah.
Volume wise, they're very similar.
I think it's the height that people are reacting to. So
these two are vertical; the others are horizontal. But volume wise and size wise, they will be very similar, I think. So no. Because they already have it.
Yeah. And I think you said in your presentation that the tooling and stuff for these big units, it's just a lot of work, basically.
Yeah, a lot of work and a lot of molds.
So, a lot of resources.
Yeah. Do we consider these big pieces, like we did with the Koenigslotter and Luther, etc., a marketing investment? Because there is no way to make your money back with the tools, but still gives a look to our battlefields that other games in the same genre will never have, and so we do it.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's it.
Speaking about the Koenigs Wotan, Eric LeBlanc is asking, when can we access players expect to see this unit released?
That's my fault. That's my fault. Again, he participates to the improvement of the Bloodcross faction. The design is done. I need to fix something because you remember maybe I did one laser barrel longer than the other instead of switching the guns in a way that look one is forward respect the other. I still have to do it, and then it's an easy mold. So I think the tooling will happen before the end of the year, and the model will be released next year.
Ooh, nice.
Very cool. Cool. So a completely different type of question. Brian Bookstrucker is asking, will there ever be Canadians in the game?
Hello, Brian. No, I love Brian. He's a super cool guy. I don't know. I don't know. Yes, I'd love to. Yes.
Let's say something else also. We will release heads with the British helmets.
Yeah.
For that will be adaptable to the Desert Scorpion bodies. The uniform of the Scorpion also matches perfectly the British uniform, which was used in Europe. So switching the heads and coloring the uniforms in khaki will make khaki drab, whatever the name of the color is, will make perfect British and Canadian troops
immediately. And we see people do this a lot, that they personalize their armies and they go for armies that really aren't represented rules-wise in the game. But like just for instance now, Dust Nordic, we actually have a spectator in the studio today, Lexa from Finland. Hello. So he actually won the Most Appreciated Army Award, and I think basically because of his conversion and painting work to make his Axis army be a Finnish army. So
yeah, it was wonderful.
Yeah, really cool.
It is wonderful.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, these little differences in between the British and the Canadians, we can only make them happen when we do the premium product. Otherwise, you know, we can have a... Do we need to have a Canadian card? I don't think so. No. I mean, would be just the same card with the Canadian...
There are a few vehicles, but that's super specific as well.
Yeah, I mean...
In the Allied Army, most of it is a paint job. It's a different paint job. And I know that's complicated, but...
Yeah. But you did show the some Italian vehicles in the presentation, but that was kind of an idea. It's not really a sub-faction, but kind of a splinter group, or however you want to call it.
The way I see it, and I think Oliver agrees with me in the end, is that the Italians would be part of a faction that we call Minor Axis Allies.
All right, yeah.
So, which will include the Finns, will include... Bulgarian, Romanian, you know, all these other minor allies of the Axis. It's a good way, I think, to expand the range with interesting models. The Italian engineering in the world of Dust is actually quite good. So they develop very interesting walkers that you have not seen yet, but they're in my notebook. And some weapons that you've seen already. And so I think it's interesting also to give variety to the troops and the vehicles. But yeah, it's for the future. I mean, the Italian community really insists with me on releasing the Italians tomorrow. I think besides Miriano and his fellow dusters from Italy, I mean, I know a guy in the US who already personalized, like Lexa, his army, his Axis army is fully Italian. And then Michael Serafatti, and then there is a guy, a duster in Australia, who's kind of doing the same. But I really doubt that the Italians are really something that our fellow dusters are waiting for, like, impatiently. We'll see. One day you can.
Yeah. But kind of related, and actually, if we go back to the thing you talked about resistance fighters, it's kind of related to that as well. Christoph asks, what are your thoughts on partisans as a conceptual sub-faction within existing blocks? And that's kind of an interesting idea, I think.
Yeah, that's the idea.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, use them as auxiliary units with the existing blocks, and then, you know, resistance is a point of view. So you resist from these guys or the other guys. I mean, there is always a good reason to resist everybody else, right? So, yeah.
But resistance is futile. Remember that.
In the world of Dust, it's at least complicated.
Definitely. Talking about different nationalities and people all around the world, Daniel Wernicke is asking, could you give us sort of an overview on which continents or which countries there are big Dust player numbers? Like, just an estimate, at least.
I don't know the numbers at all.
I have no idea of the numbers. No, but...
Not enough, for sure.
No. I can just tell you, I mean, it's a small sample rate, but I know from the people who at least go to our website to check out the Dust News, the big... if you go by numbers, it's the United States, by far. When it comes to Europe, it's Poland, Germany, Sweden, I think in that order. And there are people all over the world. Singapore is a big place. Australia has quite a few players.
The Philippines, we have this crazy crew of 15 guys.
Yeah.
No, but I mean the big markets are U.S., U.K., France, Germany, Italy, Spain. I mean, it's and of course the rest of Europe. It's where miniature gaming has been present for the longest time.
Of course,
it relates.
I think for every company, the U.S. is the number one market when it comes to figurines.
Mm. Yes, of course. That's basically true for everything, just because of the population and sort of free market capitalism kind of stuff there. So
yeah, U.S. is easy compared to Europe. There's one currency, one language.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to travel. It's a continent, but still, it's way easier to grow there, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
And
that's not my part of the job.
No.
Luckily.
But we definitely see that the US player numbers are growing, and quite rapidly, I think.
Yeah. Our Alicia and Gregoire are doing a splendid job in this regard.
Yes, so, absolutely.
They promote the game in a very correct way and towards the correct audience.
Yeah.
I'm really thankful.
So. Yeah. But kind of related to that, getting new players in the game, Michael Allen Hardin is asking, what advice do you have for running a league or a club for Dust if there isn't a local store that carries the product?
Just demo games. Just ask the local store if you can do demo games.
Yeah, so that's definitely a part of it. And I think
it's the best.
Yeah,
It's the best because the game is so easy and friendly to demo. And it's my game, so of course I'm going to be partial there. But it's so easy to demo, and it hooks people so quickly because the basic mechanics are so simple. So you can demo to kids, you can demo to people who have no idea what a miniature game is. So that's just if you can demo at the local store, I don't see how this is not going to take off. Honestly, I mean,
especially on new players.
Yeah,
older war gamers will be more reluctant because they invested a lot in other figurines and they really don't see the intelligence of playing with the squares. But once they open their mind and try the game, they see the advantages. I've heard these comments myself at Adepticon from very old gamers like me. They said, oh, actually, this is the first time we didn't discuss line of sight. this game is really interesting in the end. The US, Dust USA Patriots are doing a very good job in promoting the game. And I must say, every time there is a volunteer who starts demoing the game in a store, then the line gets into the store.
If you're in the US, I mean, the Patriots, and if you're in the Europe, the Dust Commandos. I mean, these are this guy will help you to, but just demo the game. And I mean, I know it might be a
I agree. Like we talked about at the start of the show, perseverance, because we've discussed this before on the show. Like, if you do demos, the game basically sells itself.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah,
I think so. We expect a 80 player tournament, European Championship in Warsaw this year.
Mm-hmm.
So now there was 12 or 15 of us the first year.
Yeah,
you're gonna be 80 this year. So just go at it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, just watching Warsaw grow is just so fabulous, because we were the lucky ones who were there the first year, and then for every year it's a massive step forward, and it's
now we have problem. We're going to have problems to accommodate everybody.
Yeah,
which is great.
It's a great problem.
It's a great problem to have.
Yeah, we actually saw the first scenario for the European Championship just last week, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
And they have six radio towers on each table. which is very interesting if there are going to be like 80 players or whatever it's going to be, because that's a whole lot of radio towers.
Yes, it's a huge set of radio towers, and it's going to be massive. But and I so love it. But I, as I said to Marek when he was here with for Nordic, I can't decide if I love or hate the scenario, but I love it because it's different. I've never seen this scenario before. And
I stole it. I stole it for the next book. I love it so much.
Okay, good.
I love it so much. It's such a brilliant scenario.
Yeah, definitely.
That everybody's going to play it. It's going to be in Paradise Lost. Mm-hmm. I'm going to change it a bit, but it's going to be in Paradise Lost.
I haven't read it yet.
Mm-hmm. No, it's another good, solid reason to go to Warsaw. If it's not for Tito, it's not for everything else and all the prices and stuff that we know Marek will supply. But also this scenario now, it's just wonderful.
Talking about scenarios, Mattis Breyer asked, I really love the four Babylon scenarios. Is it planned to publish more like those or any scenarios for multiplayer games?
I must have hit the spot on this one because everybody keeps asking me about. Yes, of course we'll do more. These were never popular and now everybody's talking to me about them. So okay, so it's a bit late for the next for Paradise Lost. It's a bit late but I'm gonna see what I can do, and definitely I heard you. There are many more of you that play 3 and 4 player scenarios than I expected. I just wanted to have a couple just to have a little fun, and then everybody said, oh, they're great. Okay, so yeah, there will be more, but I don't know, maybe for Paradise Lost, maybe, but for later for sure.
Okay, very cool. And believe it or not, we are now at our final question for this episode. And this question comes from Sean McDonald. Sean asks, are there any units that you regret adding to the game? And if so, why?
Oh, that's a difficult question.
So if it's for balance reasons or if it's something that doesn't work thematically.
Yeah, definitely in the past. Yes, definitely in the past. There were units that were way overpowered and really unbalanced the game. Absolutely. At the moment, I don't think so. We have a few units that are very powerful on small mats, on so small battlefields, sorry. Mm. When you put them on bigger battlefields, they become meh. Mm. But yeah, definitely the previous version of Panzerprinz was something that I hope I never see on a dust gaming table ever again.
Yeah,
but otherwise, no.
Yeah, that was ubiquitous, basically, if you played the Axis. Then mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that, which is a problem, but then it became such a big problem that it became mandatory to play Axis, pure and simple. Mm. So, which is, this was really bad. But do I regret? No, not really. Not really. I mean, I know bunkers with weapons in them might seem weird. They're not meant for tournaments. They're meant to have fun games. Yeah, okay, some things like that maybe. But other than that, no, I don't regret anything. Absolutely not.
Well, the game has a life also outside tournaments, so
of course, and that's one of the things that I think that we on the show kind of have to think about as well. We talk a lot about tournaments. We are tournament players, and we talk a lot about balance. We talk about point scales and stuff like that. But even if we talk about, oh, that unit is bad, that unit is not worth playing, that's from a very strict competitive tournament perspective. Sure. That doesn't mean that the unit is worthless. Far from it. You can make every unit in the game work for you if you want to.
Absolutely.
That's one of the strengths. There is nothing that is worthless, I feel. Definitely
and
not.
And if you assault a beach from the sea and you don't have landing craft, you won't make it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you play a beach assault scenario and you don't have any way to cross the sea, your units will drown. So there's no there's no almost no point for me putting an army point cost on these units.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have them, guess what? The guys won't go say, "Nah, we're gonna swim this one. It'll be fine." it's like putting army points on the planes that carry paratroopers.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense. Mm.
No.
Of course, there has no planes. Yeah. So guess what?
Yeah.
The guys are not jumping. So the bunker, we wanted to put army points because, okay, but it's a scenery piece. It's something that you assault, and it's a tough mission. And okay, but it doesn't need to be.
Yeah,
playable on every tournament battlefield on the planet. Definitely not.
Yeah. And you can still have a super trooper like I had in this tournament, like Tina and the Hyena. And you can have Greg's head in the Hyena's mouth for two turns and not use the execute and then lose the game because you, for some reason, for two turns, just don't execute the fucker. You only have one left. So
the F word.
Yeah, oh, sorry.
There's your one per episode.
Okay, sorry, yeah, it's one per episode.
good effort. I mean, I'm really proud of you on this.
Yeah. I did it just for you, Ollie.
Thank you very much.
Learn your troops, guys. Learn your troops and gals. But then it's easier to win.
So, as a kind of final thought, do you guys, Paolo and Olivia, do you have anything finally you want to say to our fine listeners out there?
I'm too shy.
No. Thank you for playing the game. I have a message for you. Thank you for making this awesome podcast. And then it takes a lot of time, a lot of dedication, and we wouldn't do it. So thank you, guys. Thank you all three for doing it. It's awesome to listen to it. And I put it on when I paint, and I'm happy to listen to you. I will be so much more happy in the future when there won't be any swear words for Nuda. And thank you all for playing Dust.
Yeah, so thank you for creating Dust for us to play, I have to say. So
that's ours.
But I think it's like the kind of working relationship that we have. We all contribute with our different parts, but it's not always the parts that make the whole great. It's the combination of them.
I wish so much Paolo would contribute the part which is his head. That would be awesome.
Forget about it.
Yeah. All right. So, and also, as always, a big, big thank you to everyone out there for staying with us, for listening to this podcast and supporting us, supporting the show and supporting the game. So thank you a lot from me, Johannes.
And from me, Magnus.
And of course, from your big pal and huggable Luda.
And Paolo.
And Oliver.
And as always, we will see you on the battlefield.
Oh, I missed it.
Thank you for listening to Dust War Journals. You can find us at dustwarjournals.com or on social media at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Dust War Journals. And you can find our Patreon page at patreon.com/dustwarjournals. All music used in this podcast is made by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com.